Welcome to the All Souls Forum here at KKFI. Today's broadcast deals with mental health initiatives, and we have two speakers, Teresa Cummings and Jennifer Wilding. And they're going to cover the Kansas City area mental health initiatives and other issues, including social perceptions of increased violence, the availability of care, and Medicaid expansion. We'll follow our usual format today. We'll have the talk by both women, and then we'll take a short break, and then we'll come back with questions from the audience. This program was recorded on Sunday, November the 16th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. And we will go to Craig Vollen for the intro this week.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. My name is Craig Vollen, a member of the forum committee. So this morning we have a really great program, which is in a sense a series with last week's. And last week's speaker is here, our own expert in these matters, Fred Newman, and he is going to do the introductions.
Thank you, Craig. It's nice to see folks coming out on this cold, frosty morning. If your noses have defrosted enough, you're going to get a really important presentation. When I first got into the business of community mental health in the late 60s, early 70s, how many people here remember the book and movie called Snake Pit? Yes. I was on the committee assigned by the governor to deinstitutionalize Pennsylvania when they had a court order to get rid of Snake Pit. And Snake Pit existed in Philadelphia in those days. It has moved such a long distance in terms of that. The consumers of mental health services were starting to get involved, and was actively involved in that movement for several decades. And when I moved here to Kansas City a couple of years ago, and I got to know Teresa, which committee are we on? Planning?
Planning and health equity.
And health equity under our major mentor, Linda Love Smith. I don't have that straight. Linda Smith. Anyway, we got to know each other, and I was really, then I attended one of their meetings in which the mayors of Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, went into Washington and thumped on desks and said, we need money to get our services integrated and coordinated and people talking to each other. And I attended it in September of 2013, one of the first sessions that these two professionals put together, in which they had consumers, service providers, parents, and others actually talking to each other about what their needs and policies were. It was spectacular to sit in on. I didn't understand a lot of it because I didn't know Kansas City, but there was a lot of good movement, and we're going to hear the details of it by these two really outstanding people. Teresa Reyes Cummings is Director of Program Development. I'm reading now. Development and Jackson County Community Mental Health Fund, where she provides technical assistance, training, research assistance for the development of community mental health programs and initiatives in Jackson County. She received a master's in public administration, I forgive her for that, from the great football power known as University of Kansas. I'm laughing
with you.
We'll
talk later.
Her 10 years in leadership roles in community corrections, juvenile justice, and public administration. I always found that to be an oxymoron, public administration. Anyway, serves as the national consultant providing performance management consulting services for government entities across the nation. Did you really write that sentence? Government entities, huh? That's a great word. I'll have to look that up. Anyway, she serves on a number of nonprofit boards and committees, and also ran in the Marine Corps Marathon. I once ran in the Marine Corps Marathon, too, and was beaten by a guy in a wheelchair, and probably she would have beaten me, too. She certainly beats me in looks. Jennifer, that's a sexist remark in case you missed it. Jennifer Wilding is the director of Consensus, the nonprofit that put together the public and public policy. And I've actually been watching her from a distance, and she really is doing a lot of activities that have major impact on getting the public involved. And I'm being told by somebody over here, stop talking, Fred, let them do the talking. Okay, I'll stop at this point. I could say wonderful things about Jennifer, and she is just making a major difference. With that, I'll turn it over to them and shut up.
Fred, thank you. I'm a little nervous about being followed from a distance, but you seem like a good person to have on my side, so that's great. So Teresa and I have been asked to provide an overview of what's going on in mental health in our region. And we will share how the community is being engaged, how services are funded, and then how people are being informed about mental health. We'll also share information about a new initiative that the Chamber of Commerce of Greater Kansas City has just started. So in June of 2013, President Obama launched Creating Community Solutions, a national dialogue on mental health. The Newtown tragedy was the catalyst, but what people realized very quickly was that the conversation about mental health was much broader and deeper than any tragedy. And national leaders in deliberative democracy were asked to oversee this community engagement effort. These are people who have engaged the public in a wide variety of issues over the years and are real experts at that. So Creating Community Solutions has three goals: to get people talking, to identify innovative community-based solutions, and to create action steps that support what's already happening in the community. The last thing we want to do is duplicate efforts that are already going on out there. So while any community can hold a conversation, the project has space, okay, thank you, for only 10 lead cities. These are places where the community is engaged on a pretty large level in the issue of mental health. Thanks to the leadership of Mayor James and Mayor Holland, Kansas City was selected as one of the 10 lead cities. And actually, they signed on in a day. It was very amazing, and they have been so supportive of this project as we've moved forward. Both gentlemen were in the room the whole day, taking part in the conversation that we held. You can see Mayor James has one of the keypads, and he's entering his information. So on September of 2013, the mayor's more than 300 participants and 60 volunteers spent the day together talking about mental health. And as Fred mentioned, the group included consumers, it included people who are professionals in the field, it included people who were just interested in the topic of mental health and wanted to be involved. So I want to give you a little bit of context. In Metro Kansas City, untreated serious mental illness alone costs $624 million a year. About one in every 10 adults in Greater Kansas City has a serious mental illness such as major depression, and about 40% of those cases are untreated. The current mental health system, very appropriately, focuses on helping people with serious mental illness. The broader community is affected, but rarely engaged. So this conversation is important because many people with mental health problems can recover and many disorders can be prevented if we do some early intervention, if we get connected with people early on and get them support. Involving the community can build support for improving mental health for everyone, everywhere. So along with Mayor James, we had support from funders who allowed us to hold the community conversation in September. To be selected as a lead city, because of the timing, we had to raise $100,000 in 2 weeks. we raised $105,000. People quickly identified this as something that was very important for Kansas City to be part of. So we were very fortunate that folks jumped on board and helped us take advantage of this opportunity. We also had a planning team, and Teresa was on that planning team. And each person worked really hard to make the event a success. I say that people kind of got in the canoe and everybody grabbed an oar and began to pull. So we had a ballroom full of people. We had hoped to fill 30 tables with 9 participants and a facilitator. We ended up filling 35 tables, and by 9:15 we had to turn some folks away. Our catchment area was the 6-county region. Now, of those who participated, 55% had direct personal experience with mental health challenges. 72% had direct experience with a family member or friend. So these were people who had stories to tell. And they were there because this was something that they had dealt with their whole lives. It was very important to them. I'll tell you a little bit about the process that we used. We used a 21st century town meeting, and this is a process where you use technology plus small group discussions to engage hundreds or even thousands of people at the same time on an important issue. So the way it works, each person has the same keypad all day, and then you have an iPad at the table, and there's a volunteer at the table who takes notes. The notes go to a theme team. They identify common themes from all of the tables, and 10 common themes show up on the big screen at the front of the room. People use their keypads to vote on the most important. So the participants generate all of the basic data, and then they have a chance to look at and vote on the themes that come out from the table discussions. So you get a really clear sense of what it is that people care about.
And I tell you, everybody liked playing with their little keypads.
Yes, they do. So we did that. We went through that process with 4 topics. We ended up with a lot of information, including 20 strategies for addressing mental health in youth and young adults, and 10 action items. So the planning team had to take all of that back and come up with what would be a manageable community action plan. So these are the criteria that the planning team used to make those choices. And I want to talk with you about the 5 outcomes that the group came up with based on what came out of the community conversation. So the outcome 1 deals with changing the climate in the whole community by increasing knowledge and understanding about mental health. When we asked people about barriers to mental health in the community, the top barrier was stigma. People felt like the community didn't understand mental health and that as a result they were stigmatized. So the next 2 focus on school-age young people, 12 to 17. Outcome 2 talks about what young people can do themselves to address mental health issues. We know that young people are experts on their own lives and the lives of the people around them. And so we want to make sure that we are engaging them in a leadership role in helping to meet their own needs. Outcome 3 is what adults can do to promote mental health in school-age youth. Outcome 4 deals with transition-age youth, 18 to 24, and the services they need. If somebody is a young person who's been receiving services at 18, they age out of a lot of those services, and funding is no longer available to help them. Services to transition-age youth is identified as a major issue in really all of the 10 lead sites, or all of the lead sites. Outcome 5 is about sustainability and encouraging programs at work. So creating community solutions connects Kansas City with cities around the country that are working on the issue of mental health. So far, 7 cities have conducted large-scale community engagements, and in those cities and in smaller conversations around the country, thousands of people have gotten involved. There's another new component to this that's kind of cool. Creative Community Solutions is working with Lady Gaga's Born This Way Foundation to hold conversations with young people. Text, talk, act, not easy to say, but it's a very cool project. It invites young people to gather a few of their friends and to use their smartphones to download questions and then upload their responses. So that's working out really well, and it's turning into a model that I think we're going to be able to use on a variety of issues. So there's some shared strategies that are emerging that are rooted in a community-based approach that reflects the wide range of experience from youth, families, and professionals in the field. So they include things like community awareness and education, engaging young people directly, early identification, and focus on transition-age young adults. Like the other lead sites, we held a follow-up meeting to share the outcomes, to make sure the community agreed that we had identified the correct outcomes, and to get a little bit more detail from folks. And then the planning team is using the results from both community conversations to develop charges to 5 action teams that will conduct research, identify best practices, and put together a more detailed action plan. The first action teams are going to start work in December, and then the other 3 follow up soon. In addition, we're still working with the National Creating Community Solutions team and the other sites to continue to build momentum. And now Teresa is going to talk about how we pay for the mental health services that the community requires.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Jackson County Mental Health Fund. It's amazing how many people pay taxes, but they don't always know what their taxes are going to pay for. So I like to inform people about the Jackson County Mental Health Fund, which is a property tax levy here in Jackson County. So those of you who do read your tax bill, when you get it, I think it should be coming out soon if it hasn't already, there should be a line item for the mental health fund, and that's who I work for. We're a very small office of 4 people, but that property tax generates approximately $11 million in Jackson County, which pays for services for people who do not have insurance or who are possibly underinsured. Some people who do have insurance, their insurance may not pay for case management and different things like that to keep them in the community. And how we do that is we give grants to nonprofit organizations here in Jackson County. Their care that they provide must meet state standards, also standards set by the Department of Mental Health. For example, case managers and clinicians all have to be licensed. They have to have a MSW or equivalent degree and get their licensure from the state. With those resources, we fund approximately 35 plus organizations here in Jackson County. We fund all of the major community mental health centers, which includes Comprehensive out in Independence, SWOPE Behavioral Health, Rediscover, which covers the southeastern part of Jackson County, and then Truman Medical Center. Those are the 4 major mental health centers. And then we fund a lot of smaller organizations like the Kansas City Care Clinic that provides mental health care, Samuel Rogers, Maddie Rhodes, the domestic violence shelters. We have a number of organizations that provide the care. Total last year, we estimated that we cover 16,000 unduplicated people here in Jackson County. And just keep in mind, those people without our fund would not have access to mental health care. So we really are serving as a safety net to the federal and the state Medicaid systems. The services, types of services that we cover are psychiatry, individual and group counseling, medications. Some people who take some psychotropic medications, they're very expensive. We do encourage our providers to get our clients assistance through PAP programs and different things like that, but sometimes those may not be available, so we help cover the cost of that. Sometimes we cover some transportation expenses and a lot of case management, because case management isn't typically covered by insurance plans or Medicaid. And then we also audit all of the providers every year. They get audited twice a year, so we ensure that the tax dollars are only spent on Jackson County residents. And we were one of the funders of the National Dialogue Initiative that Jennifer talked about. I'm real excited that our board is starting to look at other ways that we can leverage our dollars with other funders and help support community programs like this that touch a larger base of people. And so that's helping the community conversation go forward. A little bit about the Affordable Care Act. I just want people to, I'm sure, or I hope most of you are supportive of Medicaid expansion, which we'll continue to work on that. But with the Affordable Care Act, what it does is it allows people, of course, to have more access to insurance. They are also the mental health parity. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that, but what that does is those who offer insurance to their employees allows for mental health services to be a part of the benefit package without restrictions, because in the past they may have had higher co-pays or they may have had to pay extra to get mental health coverage, and now if you offer health coverage to your employees, you also have to add mental health coverage and substance abuse coverage without any discrimination per se. With Missouri Medicaid does cover mental health care. It does not cover case management, unfortunately. It covers things like psychiatry and your individual counseling, psychotherapy, things like that. But if you're not eligible for Medicaid and you cannot afford health insurance, then that is the gap. And those are a lot of the people that we are covering. So I would encourage you all, if you're not already, to ask your legislators to please support Medicaid expansion someday, right? I live in Kansas. I work in Missouri, so I see it on both sides of the state line. And it's just frustrating. Did I say that? We're on radio, right? I'm going to talk now about three different initiatives, some larger initiatives that are going on in Kansas City. Some of them started before the National Dialogue got started, and they were more at a grassroots effort. But as I was listening to Jennifer speak about the initiative, the very first goal of the initiative is to change the climate of Kansas City, change how we're thinking about mental health here in Kansas City. And these next three initiatives are really starting to do that. The first one is called Trauma Matters KC. And it is a large collaborative of both providers, just interested individuals, public safety, government, nonprofit, anybody who comes in contact with anybody, churches. You'd be surprised how many people have had a traumatic experience in their life. And left untreated or unaddressed continues to manifest itself in different ways throughout that person's lifetime. Unfortunately, here in Kansas City, our children are also exposed to a lot of trauma with divorce, with parents going to prison, with violence, abuse, neglect, all of those types of things at a young age, again, left untreated or unaddressed, continue to manifest itself. And sometimes behaviors that we may think are unusual or we may not approve of, sometimes are coping mechanisms for those people. And so Trauma Matters KC is a bi-state effort. And again, it is a large collaborative of people. And what they are doing is addressing trauma in a really different way. What is trauma? We ask ourselves, you know, what does that really mean? A lot of people have a misconception that trauma is something really, really bad, like, you know, you're experiencing trauma in war, you're experiencing trauma by witnessing a death or a murder or being in a natural disaster or something like that. And really, trauma is identified by the individual. And it's the emotional impact of experiences that happen to children and adults as a result of certain physical, economical, psychological, or environmental events or stressors. I might be very resilient where Jennifer may not be. So my definition or my resistance to trauma or my experiences may be a little different from her. So it's very individual. Domestic violence is also a cause of trauma. A lot of people experience that. Community violence and results of trauma can include severe injury, feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, feelings of neglect, abandonment, and just your inability to cope. So we're really trying to educate the community more about trauma and really on an individual basis. Trauma-informed care. I'm just going to sum it up in a real quick nutshell. Typically, in helping professions, we may tend to ask, what's wrong with you? You know, why are you acting that way? What's wrong with you? But with trauma-informed care, how that is changing is we're asking, what's happened to you? Can you all see the difference? If you ask what's wrong with you, that automatically gives you a label, makes you feel bad. You don't want to talk about it because obviously there's something wrong, supposedly, versus what's happened to you. It really gives you an opportunity to engage in a conversation into the experiences of that individual. So treatment providers, social service agencies, our law enforcement, public safety, we're really trying to educate them to start thinking about people when they come in contact as to what's happened to you versus what's wrong with you. And even now our business community is wanting to get engaged because they have customers that come in and you just never know when somebody might be acting just a little different. Again, trauma-sensitive practices. One thing that's happening across the nation as trauma-informed care and just being trauma-informed is really taking shape is organizations are starting to be able to evaluate themselves to being trauma-informed, to having trauma-sensitive practices. So there's kind of a continuum. And some organizations, they get the training and that's it. Some organizations are actually implementing lots of different practices so that they can see some behavioral change within their own organization, some cultural shifts, as well as changes in their population that they're serving. And again, trauma-sensitive practices is really changing how the providers are interacting with the clients, not just having the knowledge base. Trauma-informed community, that is really where Trauma Matters is coming in even more impactfully because they are inviting the whole entire community. Again, the business sector, the faith sector, just anybody who's interested in how are we interacting with our brothers and sisters out in the community is giving people an opportunity to get engaged in this conversation. And now they have training that's available. So anybody, if you want some training in your business here at the congregation or any other congregation, you can contact somebody that's involved with Trauma Matters KC, and they can come out and give a presentation to your group about what it means to be trauma-informed. Let's see. The next one here is mental health first aid. I'm a mental health first aid instructor, so I love to talk about this. But mental health first aid, again, it's another national initiative that here in Kansas City we have an opportunity to take part in. But it's an 8-hour course designed to teach the layperson the signs and symptoms of mental illness, how to respond in a crisis, and how to get that person to appropriate professional help. It's similar to first aid. If you are certified in first aid or CPR, you recognize the signs or symptoms if somebody is choking or having a heart attack or a seizure or anything like that. You know how to administer just quick, immediate care until a doctor or the ambulance or somebody comes about. That's exactly what mental health first aid is. Funders, ourselves being one of them, the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City, has put a lot of money into making mental health first aid courses available all throughout the community.
Didn't you have a day this last year?
Yes, that was really, really exciting. We had a one-day event were, I believe we trained, it was over 300 people in one day. So we had mental health first aid courses available all throughout Kansas City. We had a class up north. We had them in Johnson County, Wyandotte County, in Lee Summit, Eastern Jackson County, out in Blue Springs, and several classes at the Kauffman Foundation. So we had a mental health first aid day where 300 plus people got certified as mental health first aiders. And we're planning to do that same event in this spring. I'm hoping it'll be early March, so stay tuned for that. These are, the three components of mental health first aid. It's so funny. Some people that come into the class, they think when they leave they're going to be clinicians and they're going to get to diagnose people. But that's not what this class is about. Although you may really recognize a lot of things, we want to remind people that when you leave the class, you're not going to be a clinician. You cannot make a diagnosis. You can't go out and label people, but you can provide immediate care. And why is this so important? Again, as Jennifer already talked about, mental health problems are very common. I bet you all of us in this room, if we haven't experienced some form of depression or anxiety, we probably know somebody who has. And as I teach the mental health first aid class, I often ask people, how many of you have an EAP program? I'll ask you all, how many of you have EAP through your health insurance? Anybody? Okay. EAP, an employee assistance program for mental health care? Okay. So everybody in the room pretty much raises their hand. And then I ask, how many of you use it? Not very many people raise their hand, except for me. I cash in on my 10 sessions every year. I'm married. I've been married to him for a long time. I have adult children that did not come with a handbook. And once in a while, I just need some support on how to deal with some things. And so for me, it's just like having a life coach almost. Somebody besides my husband, besides my friends, a professional that can help me just get through the little bumps in the road that we have. It keeps me healthy. And so I encourage people to use that. And those are the things that we talk about in mental health first aid to get people acclimated and comfortable. Again, stigma is another one. There is just the stigma associated with getting mental health care. Unfortunately, people get labeled as crazy, and we don't want to be crazy, right? So we need to really take that away. In mental health first aid, you learn ouchie. And those are the five things that you do in mental health first aid. You assess for risk of suicide or harm. You listen non-judgmentally. You'd be surprised how hard that is sometimes. Give reassurance and information to the individual. Encourage appropriate professional help. And encourage self-help and support strategies. And we go through algae with everything as far as psychotic episodes, depression, anxiety, suicide, different things like that. In Kansas, there have been approximately 7,000 people trained as mental health first aiders. Missouri is one of the leading states. Now we're over 16,000 people that have been trained across the state in mental health first aid. And the audience include, again, it's more geared towards the general community, so you'll see that is the most people who participate. Some behavioral health professionals attend. They come and they are surprised about how much they actually learn that can be applied that's not therapeutic. And I think that's very helpful. Law enforcement is really liking this course. The faith communities, the governor 2 years ago led a statewide faith initiative, so we went across the state and trained a lot of congregations. And if you want more information about mental health first aid, go to Mental Health KC. There are grant dollars available for people to offer classes to their congregations or just in their community or in their neighborhood. So take advantage of it while there's resources. And there's also a national website to learn more about what's going on across the nation. The last initiative is the Greater Kansas City Mental Health Coalition, and it's a stigma campaign that was started by the Jewish Family Services. It was first initiated in the Jewish community. So what you see here is the marketing campaign that they have developed. Everyone liked this marketing campaign so well. Providers and other mental health stakeholders wanted to be involved, so now there's a coalition around it. And I'm not going to go through that. This is one of the marketing tools that they use. It impacts all of us. 1 in 4 people have some kind of exposure or experience with mental health. So why isn't anybody talking about it? Again, stigma. The message is, it's real, it's common, it's treatable, and it's okay to talk about it. Very, very simple. The marketing firm, is it Bernstein and Rain?
Bernstein Rain.
Yeah, Bernstein Rain. They did this marketing campaign pro bono. And it's just amazing the tools that they have. It's just basically a call to action and asking people to start to talk about mental health. I have some postcards I'll pass around. But these are the postcards, and what they did within their congregation is they initially just sent out these simple postcards to everybody, and they have different messages on them. They're very simple. So these are a couple of the postcards and the posters. And they also did a really, really nice, I guess, YouTube video, you can call it, and they are members of their congregation that have experienced mental health in one form or another. Either they themselves have either attempted suicide, have had depression, family members have completed suicide, and they're all talking about mental health. And I think what's so appealing is that they're all from the Jewish community. So it's themselves talking to their own community and making it okay to talk about mental health. And how the rest of the community is going to start using this campaign is Bernstein Rain has agreed to share the templates. And what we can do now, whether it's the Native American community, the African American community, Hispanic community, is that we want to tailor the looks of these postcards and the videos to fit the population. So we want to make them more diverse. We want to make them in Spanish or in whatever language they need to be. But Bernstein and Rain has agreed pro bono to offer these templates available to the whole entire community. And so that's what providers are getting together. But I just think it's a great, simple messaging campaign that helps reduce stigma and lets everybody know that it's okay to talk about mental health and to receive care. Jennifer's going to talk about the LASH initiative with the chamber that's going on.
The Greater Kansas City Chamber and the Blue Cross began the Healthy KC initiative. And this includes, what they found was the business community sees that community health will be a really key element in the future in recruiting individuals and businesses to Kansas City. And they said, as a business community, we need to get out in front. We need to start working on health and mental health in Kansas City. So they've identified 5 health-related topics. Behavioral health is one. Teresa and I are on the Behavioral Health Action Team. We are not spokespeople for the project, but we are involved. And each of the action teams have been asked to form an advocacy plan to engage the community about the topic. Also to define how success can be measured, and then identify specific actions to improve the region's standing. And we have been told we need to have a report by February, so I think we're going to be working pretty hard between now and then to pull something together. And that's our presentation.
Yeah, that's what's going on in Kansas City as far as mental health. So we're open to answer any questions that anybody may have.
You're listening to both Teresa Cummings and Jennifer Wilding talking about mental health as part of the National Dialogue on Mental Health that's going on right now. You're listening to the All Souls Forum. Of course, we're going to take a break. We will have a few messages for you, and then we'll come back and we'll do the questions and answers segment from the audience. So hang tight. We've got a couple of things to do for you, and then we'll be right back.
This week on American Roots, it's Philly's sole sources for the pop juggernaut Hall & Oates. And we learn that guitarist John Oates is a closet folkie into country blues, then touring South Louisiana with singer Johnny Allen for Swamp Pop, a mix of Cajun rock and roll, country, and soul. Join me, Nick Spitzer, for American Roots from PRX.
Wednesday evening at 7:30.
One Struggle KC is providing protest training this Wednesday, which will provide protest skills to folks who wish to exercise their First Amendment rights to help maximize the impact of their protest in a safe and nonviolent atmosphere. The training will be at St. Andrew's Church, 4601 Benton Boulevard, on Wednesday from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
On the next Sprouts, students of English as a Second Language at East Boston High School share songs, thank you letters, and interviews expressing their gratitude. This cross-cultural celebration of thanks tells a shared story of migration, transnational relationships, and new experiences in the U.S. That's Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, Thursday at noon.
Apologize, I wasn't here right at the start. But I was at the mental health conference back in January or whenever it was, so I get the emails. So hopefully I know a little bit about what Jennifer's doing as well. A trend question. The difficulty that I have with attacking the stigma issue, which is, it is a very clear perception challenge, is that it's still coming at it from a defect-oriented, that the alternative is to jump past that and really talk about whole fitness and whole life readiness. So I guess my question is, in the work that you're doing, is there starting to be maybe a transformation in how we talk about this out of the defect-centered perspective and onto the more so that health is health, and particularly with the young people, and they're so digitally immersed. There's so much mental content in current work. I just wonder, are we ready to make that shift, or is it starting, or maybe we can do it here?
Can I go?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that we're seeing, when we talk about physical health, we all kind of know some things that we can do as a community. We can have walking trails. We can have places where people can have community gardens. We can make sure that good, affordable food is available for people. There are positive ways that a community can work towards health. There are also positive ways that a community can work towards mental health. So, and it's not like any one of us can ignore mental health. It's not like some of us are okay and some of us aren't. It's like we can all benefit from a positive approach to mental health and to making sure that all of us are thinking about mental health and looking for ways to improve the mental health in the community.
And I would also have to say that we have some really good advocates, people who have experienced mental health at some severe levels, who have recovered. So talking about mental health recovery-oriented language, but what's very unique about them is, or not unique, but just so energizing, is that how they're maintaining is through physical activity, through meditation, really taking on the whole body. For such a long time, I think our system separated the head from the rest of our body. I don't know any of us that walk around that way, but that's how we were treated, right? So there is a national movement to integrate health and mental health. And I also think there is just more people that are stepping up to the plate and talking about their own experience and being able to educate others about their recovery process through healthy diet, not being medicated, but meditation, having peer groups, physical exercise. It is just amazing. Having just ran the Marine Corps Marathon, Oh my gosh, I was on such a high for so long, just the energy involved with that training, and I haven't been able to run for a few days. I'm starting to feel kind of antsy. Yes, there is, and I'm so grateful for those, I call them participants because they've received care versus consumers. I don't like that word.
Jewish Family Services, when they developed their campaign, one of the things they said was, we remember in the 60s and 70s when there was a stigma against cancer. And if you had cancer, it was like there was sort of something wrong with you. It wasn't just physically. It was people thought you could catch it. There was definitely a stigma. And as we've learned more about cancer, as people have shared their own experiences, as we banded together to take care of people who are dealing with cancer, we think about it differently now. We don't think about it as something where you kind of slink into the doctor's office and somebody does something to you. We think about it as something where the whole community can help reduce the risk of cancer. So by talking about mental health and mental illness, we can't develop community-based solutions if the community is not part of the conversation. So by having this conversation through what the Jewish community is doing, through creating community solutions, through all of these other projects, we can find new ways to deal with mental health and mental illness that engage more than just folks who are dealing with really serious issues.
I'm Pat Knorrier, and while I do compliment the two of you in terms of communicating to people who have hearing difficulties, I still have a few. And my question is, does GKC mean Greater Kansas City?
Yes, Greater Kansas City.
That's all I want to know.
Okay, that's an easy one.
I think sometimes people have a great deal of trouble finding a provider, and particularly people without insurance and people who may have a family member who needs care and they need advice on how to deal with that. What kind of advice can you provide? You know, based on my own experience on behalf of someone I know, calling NAMI, they say, oh, but we don't give that kind of information. Tri-County Mental Health, well, without insurance, the person's up a creek. You know, there's a big gap here. And a lot of people who do have mental illness fall within that gap between Medicaid and having enough to buy insurance.
I can tell you our website, it's called www.jacksoncountycares. So if you just think about Jackson County Cares About You, jacksoncountycares.org lists all of the providers that receive tax dollar funding. So everyone that receives mental health levy dollars is on that website. Anybody can go to that website and look and see all of the list of providers, and that would be a good place to start. Because if they were to say, well, no, we can't serve you because we only take Medicaid, then they would say, I notice you receive tax levy dollars, and that would be a resource for them. Platte County also has a tax levy. It's the Tri-County. It's Clay, Platte, and Cass. Is that right? So they also have a tax levy. Now, whether or not they have a website, I'm not sure. You might look up Tri-County Levy and see if they do, but they should list the same thing. There are some resources available. Unfortunately, people would have to ask and say, is there any way I can get access to tax levy dollars?
Could you talk a little bit?
System? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead. Does the 211 system with United Way offer anything like that?
Yes, United Way 211. Their website has been revamped, so you can put in mental health care or mental health services and a whole list of organizations that provide mental health care. Again, you'd have to sift through it and see which one would best fit your needs. But 211, thanks, Jennifer. That's a great website as well.
Could you talk a little bit about the goals that this
project set and about follow-up on adjusting approaches towards the goals that you want to reach.
Goals. Are you talking about the national dialogue, or is there a particular initiative you might be interested in?
No, I'm thinking about putting, when you put this together, mm-hmm. you must have had goals that you wanted to reach. And I wanted to know about how do you monitor whether you're reaching these goals and make adjustments so that you can try to reach them if something's working or something isn't working.
Okay. He's talking about goals for the initiative.
Creating community solutions specifically.
And those goals.
Well, part of the Creating Community Solutions project right now, the phase that we're entering, is the action team phase. And so the job of the action teams is to gather information and to... we want to know how we can make a unique impact, so we want to make sure we're not duplicating. We want to make sure that we're using evidence-based practices. And as part of that, the action team will identify how they want to be evaluated and what those final goals will be. So we don't have numerical goals at this point. We know the areas where we want to work, and we do want to be able to make a measurable impact. But as we've talked with our funders, and I think we'll be engaging some additional funders as well, what they tell us is that they want to be engaged in this project as a team. So we're looking for strategic ways to make sure that as we move forward, that we identify the most important goals and we get those folks involved in helping us reach them.
With mental health first aid, the curriculum, it is evaluated nationally. So they, after each participant takes the class, there's an evaluation, and all of those evaluations go to a national firm that does the evaluation on those, so we can see how much people are retaining the information, using the information, what they're saying about the course. And then they're actually following up with people 6 months afterwards to see if they're still using the information that they received in the course. With trauma-informed care, the Trauma Matters KC group has some mission, statements to provide the community with information on the causes of trauma, mostly to provide information. But what we're seeing, particularly as a funder, we're seeing more agencies incorporating the trauma language into their mission, into their goal statement. And then there's also certain methodologies of treatment that you could use that are trauma sensitive. And we're seeing more organizations use those evidence-based practices, which themselves are evaluated. So it just kind of depends on the initiative. With the stigma campaign, it's more about education. So hopefully people are seeing these messages. And so there's different levels of evaluation depending on the initiative. I hope that answers your question. Mona?
Teresa, I'm Mona Perry with American Indian Community, and I want to really thank you for what information you have given me through these many, many years. It's been many years, and I really want to thank you for that. And we have groups of American Indians with the First People of Community of Christ Church and Independence now meeting. And we've just started this group, and I will be getting in touch with you because I think we have some of our young ones that needs information and how to cope with trauma. And so I will be getting in touch with you, but I really want to thank you for what you have done for my people. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And with that, Mona, mental health first aid, there is also a curriculum targeted at young adults. So I would say the youngest participant, maybe 16, can participate, and it's a class geared more towards that population. So that might be a great resource for the church to offer that class to the congregation, to the young people.
Thank you for being so thorough. Would you provide more definition of the of case management, its importance, and why it really needs to be funded?
Absolutely. Oftentimes, people that are experiencing mental health issues or concerns, if they're severe, A lot of times they just may have problems getting out of bed, simple hygiene, reminders of their appointments, and just getting to their psychiatrist could be very difficult. Medication management. I don't know about you all, but I rarely finish all of my antibiotics. As soon as I start feeling good, I probably quit taking it, right? Well, oftentimes with medications, psychotropic medications, once you start feeling good, you may think you don't need it anymore. But unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way when you're dealing with the brain and the mind. So case management is very, very important because it helps keep that person in their home. It helps remind and keep that person engaged in their treatment, provides transportation assistance if that person's needing transportation assistance. There are, here in Kansas City, we have what we call an ACT team. It's called Assertive Community Treatment, and those are for the most severe clients that we have. They need case management daily. And if without that daily case management, more than likely they would end up in our prisons or our jails because they commit petty crimes like trespassing or petty theft or things like that. That would get them in contact with the law enforcement. So case management is very important to keep those people engaged and on track and maintaining. And also their case manager, if there was something going on and there are some triggers, the case manager is usually the first person to know. Oftentimes, people may not see their psychiatrist, but maybe once every 2 or 3 months. You don't want to wait if there's something going on for them to see the psychiatrist. You want somebody to be engaged quickly so they can get the issues addressed quickly. Thank you. That's a great question.
Good morning. My name is Tomas Moran, and I'm actually visiting here from Palo Alto, California, where I'm a member of our UU Church. They're a longtime member of our UU Church, and I'm delighted by the great work that I see UU Church is doing all over the place in highlighting these issues. I'm actually working here in Kansas City quite often for the last 4 years on payment reform for healthcare, and recently gotten involved in the mental health side of the equation. And one of the opportunities that I see for sustainability is the fact that in some states, and I think Kansas is one of them, the mental health budgets for the Medicaid and the physical health are beginning to be merged. And those insurance companies that are covering the Medicaid managed care organizations are having now to deal with a joint budget. And what a great opportunity it is to approach them for a more comprehensive way of dealing with it. Are you doing any work and reaching out to the payers, particularly the Medicaid payers, who would have the opportunity to creatively fund case management, for example, in their own self-interest, perhaps, to kind of manage both mental and physical health?
The Jackson County Mental Health Fund is a payer of last resort for mental health care here in the county since it's property tax levy. Were you here to listen to that part? Okay. We ourselves have not been talking with like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and United Healthcare and those entities, but what I can tell you is that the philanthropic community, ourselves, the Healthcare Foundation, the Reach Healthcare Foundation, H&R Block, we're starting to look more at innovative ways that we can pool our dollars together and leverage each other's philanthropic and taxpayer money to fill those gaps that the private insurance or Medicaid is not covering. We're getting ready to embark on a strategic plan to really start to look at what's on the horizon as far as payer initiatives, payer concerns, but we are talking in that way. And also, what is it going to mean for us as a payer of last resort with having health care and mental health care combined together? A lot of our bigger providers, the community mental health centers, CMHCs, they call them, are starting to be health care homes. So how is that going to impact funding? What is that going to do to their financial resources? And what do we as a payer of last resort need to be addressing? So that's where we're at with that right now.
Okay, well, Jennifer and Teresa, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate this wonderful presentation.
You've been listening to Teresa Cummings and Jennifer Wilding talking about mental health in Kansas City. This program was recorded on Sunday, November 16th at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced and edited for broadcast each week by Barry Lee. The theme music is composed and performed by Kansas City artist Fred Potter. Tune in again next week for another edition of the All Souls Forum right here at the same time, same place. Thanks especially to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for their help each week in producing this show.